Gentlemen, how we doing?
Good, James. How are you?
I'm doing really well.
Doing great.
Well,
another month.
Been pushing through another month. Yeah. It's been a fun ride, fun few months. You know, not something that we didn't see coming, but nevertheless, we're here to talk about it.
That's right. Us Midwesterners are thawing out from a pretty chilly February, I think. Right?
This is very true.
Yeah, so it finally came. So anybody enjoying a nice warm climate, well done.
Yes. No, good decision.
Yeah, right. But
we're with us and moving to a warm climate.
Yeah, no.
Hey, can't go wrong. It's
good. Yeah, and we really start to feel it through February. So yeah. Anyway, bravo for those of you who escaped. But the bottom line is your portfolio is kind of living this world that isn't dictated by temperatures that we feel with our bodies, but perhaps temperatures we feel in the economy and capital markets.
Right.
Okay. February was a little chilly. And when you look, like the S&P 500 pulled back 1.3%. Hardly much to write home about, but the way that it got there felt very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, there's one thing to say, like you started the month and you finished the month, you're only down 1.3%. But when you ripped up a little bit, you know, went higher in the month and then came down from that and then added some negative, that starts to feel more uncomfortable. And with technological advancements and stuff, you can check your portfolio every day.
Yeah.
We'd recommend you don't.
Right.
It's okay if you do.
Yeah,
but just recognize that markets oftentimes give us more than they should have, and then they take back more than they should have. And that's what kind of creates volatility. But recognize over long periods of time, we typically see mean reversion or things that look rather normal over long periods of time. S&P 500, top 500 companies in the US, down 1.3% in the month of February. Okay, how'd the bond market do? Surprisingly well. But what's happening though is bonds are starting to act like you would expect historically. So what do I mean by that? As risk has elevated and markets have gotten choppy, bonds have actually stepped up and bolstered strength.
Right.
So in February, the bond market, as measured by the aggregate bond index, was actually up 2.2%. We've seen bonds and stocks being volatile and selling off in unison because what has been the biggest threat in the last, I don't know, as long as I can think about here, us doing this podcast, inflation.
Right.
Right? That drives interest rate volatility. We're kind of working in reverse, and we'll get to why we're working in reverse here. And perhaps we can think of the cooling of inflation. I'm amazed that I'm saying that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the direction that the new administration is taking us towards. So I digress. Let's jump into the next topic.
Right. So if we looked at the market and, you know, what's kind of gone on, that's always kind of in a rearview mirror. But when we're looking at the portfolios,
yeah,
and how we design them, how we put them together, mm-hmm, you know, what kind of stood out in the portfolio in the last kind of 30 days?
Sure. So a couple, just solidifying the movements that we made after the election. That was good to see those continuing to work on balance well. The other things that we did in February for our clients was stabilize what we would view as the core. This is not the time to make any concerted bets anywhere. And when I say bets, that's probably the wrong term to use when it comes to long-term investment strategies. Let's just talk about stylized exposures that are only going to work if one thing happens. Sometimes you need to just sit in a neutral position and let some things sort out. And so that's where we're at right now. Why would you do that? Anytime you have a phase transition, it's okay to just say, I'm going to let the dust settle a bit here. That's really what we're doing in the portfolios for our retirees and, quite frankly, those who have a little bit of a risk appetite too. Again, it's okay to go not what's called flat, where you're like in cash,
right,
but neutral positioning that just looks like a market, so to speak. So that's where we've pushed ourselves. Maybe one of the things that our clients, I think, have noticed is a little bit of precious metals exposure. Right. You know, recognize that sometimes that can be inflation hedge, but also a hedge against everything going wrong in the world. So our clients do see that in their portfolio now.
Right. You know, we try to build it to kind of withstand some of these.
Yeah. And recognize that there are a number of ways to gain that precious metals exposure. Sometimes a fund manager likes to hold it within the fund, or you can buy the actual, say, ETF that is sitting on that physical precious metal.
you know, we're always looking, you know, obviously we're always looking at the portfolios, looking at the markets, looking at the economy, but we do also look back on some of, you know, the decisions we've made, right? Yeah. Or the thoughts we've had or things that we've talked about, whether it's just, you know, the three of us as a firm with clients specifically. And one of the things we're kind of looking back on is we actually talked this year that we anticipated some market weakness heading into, you know, end of February, March, April kind of time frame, right? I guess we talked about that and we're starting to see it a little more, right?
And you know, we'll never take a victory lap because it's a new challenge every day. But it is nice to go back and kind of look through our thesis. And then if it played out, you know, that means that we're looking at the right things. Okay. Mm-hmm. One of the main, ingredients to long-term success in portfolio management is looking at the right things and actually boiling down all the litany of data points to the things that matter most. And those actually change even. So yeah, we anticipated the weakness. And what were we forecasting? It's a change in the way that, you know, the Biden administration was doing its economic impact versus how Trump wants to impact the economy. And we figured that in that change, it would be met with uncertainty. Markets hate uncertainty, and you get the chop.
Yeah.
So anyway, that really wasn't too hard to come up with.
Well, and we could probably argue that the chop's always there, right? You know, we talk internally, you know, the three of us for sure, in terms of like the frequentism of how the markets are going up and down or kangaroo portfolios. There's lots of ways to look at it. But, you know, we see these ups and downs, and you talked even earlier this podcast, you know, it's maybe not as high as it gets or as low as it gets,
right?
But it does go high and low.
Right, right. So frequentism is the study. I mean, quite frankly, frequentism is just probabilities and statistics, okay? We can use it in a number of fashions, like, well, frequently when we have this type of environment, what investment works the best? But then there's another form of frequentism that is looking back at like historical movements of the market. And to have a 5% pullback, for instance, I don't know, you go back to like the 1920s and say to date, you know, you would expect to see a 5% pullback in the S&P 500 around three times a year. So when it happens, you don't have to be surprised. Mm-hmm. And you can say this is part of the ride.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you, even 10% pullbacks kind of come up around 1% or one time per year. Mm-hmm. They're not fun, but we get through them and it's part of the ride. It's part of that whole, you know, there's an old saying on Wall Street that's the stock market takes the stairs up and the elevator down. But luckily, the elevator doesn't go to the basement or to the lowest level. I mean, it's, you know, stairs up and it's kind of then you build up. But the problem is that elevator ride down is checking the health of the market. Mm-hmm. But boy, is it uncomfortable.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very uncomfortable. But, you know, even 3%, if we go the other way, 9 out of the last 15 years, there's been at least 2 or 3 different 3% pullbacks within those years.
Yeah.
And that really is kind of stretched that last bull market that we saw. So it is normal. Those volatility events are normal. Like you said, it's just can be uncomfortable getting through there. And the shift, Ryan, that you started to talk about in economics from maybe the demand side to the supply side. Talk to us a little bit more about, you know, maybe the shift in, you know, the difference of presidencies and the economic you know, side that they're looking at.
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time diving into that, just what you bring up. You know, when you think about it, economics, I mean, I've always been a fan. My undergrad's in economics. And I think that it's not exactly the capital markets, but it certainly drives the capital markets. So you got to understand it. All right. What we've seen more recently, and quite frankly, what the populace loves, is called demand side economics. And you're creating demand by essentially giving the people something, mm-hmm. whether it's a straight up handout of money, whatever it is, you create now the ability for them to go pursue a good or a service with that extra. So you're creating demand with just an injection. Supply side economics is different. And it's not as fun for the populace, but it's basically creating the opportunity through, you know, perhaps corporate tax cuts. If all of a sudden a corporation is going to be more profitable, they're going to be able to hire more.
Right.
Perhaps it's reduced regulation. So you reduce regulation and then allow more individuals to enter the workforce. But the problem is it creates where you've got to go work for that carrot, okay? That's not as fun. The issue is demand side driven economic stimulus is very inflationary. Supply side is not, or it's less inflationary, far less inflationary, but it comes with work and it's not fun for the populace. Mm-hmm. We are transitioning there. But I think you're going to hear things like, you know, tax cuts for the rich or things like that, because they would theoretically be the ones owning businesses and stuff. I get it, okay? And this is not a political statement, but if we have an inflation problem, but we still want to grow our economy,
we got to combat it.
Well, and you know, I mean, that would be a road to travel down, right? So it would be one of the roads you could travel down. Just so everyone understands what's happening. And when we talk about a phased transition, that's what I'm studying. That's what we're studying. That's what we're really digging in and looking at and understanding where is that drive going to come from for economic growth. Make sense?
It makes sense. Yeah. Yep. You know, it's that's that trickle-down effect, right? So you're hoping that by that trickle-down from cutting from businesses, maybe that it's going to get to the lower middle class, sure. You know, and provide the stimulus there. But, you know, one thing that has also caught the attention of everyone, mm-hmm. I think, is DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, right? And, you know, things are moving very quickly, high emotions, there's a lot of cuts happening. How's DOGE impacting maybe our strategy or economics or markets?
Yeah, I think that's what you got to really look at it. Yeah. On balance, like, what does it do to the economy? And when we say DOGE, I mean, this is like the newest arm of the government. It's not the cryptocurrency with the little dog on the thing, you know.
It's coming out.
Right? But what's happening is the government efficiency. Here's the issue. We don't even need to talk like numbers or exactly what they're finding and stuff like that. I know we'll jump into a little bit of that, but here's the issue you got. When the government spends money, when the government prints money and then spends it, it really doesn't matter where it goes. It drives demand. Or how about this? It weakens the dollar, and that's what creates the inflation. But when you have an abundance of something, each unit is worth less, right? So as you're spending, you know, in any way, shape, or form, you're printing this money. It's called deficit spending. The value of the dollar goes down. And then so share of XYZ company was worth $100 one day. We print a bunch of money. Well, now it takes $110 to buy that same company. Not that it got any more valuable, but it just, the dollar got less valuable. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's one of the things you got to think about. So if you think that the efficiency comes in, they're going to find waste, and then pull back on that spending. The issue that you have, it doesn't matter where the money goes. It's stimulative when it's deficit spending. It's inflationary. So I'm not saying that we don't need something like this,
right.
But recognize that these are austerity measures.
Yeah.
Unless at some point we hear that the savings is going to be pushed out through a glimmer of demand side economics. Mm-hmm. So take the savings and say, you know what, we're going to give this back to the taxpayer. At that point, now you got something pretty stimulative.
Right.
But in the meantime, it's being viewed as austerity measures. And quite frankly, the rate that it's moving, it's putting investors and just citizens on edge.
Yeah.
Some of the headlines that I'm seeing out there and some of the phone calls that I'm getting too, I'm concerned for the mindset of my clients, especially those who are, you know, maybe getting Social Security or something.
Well, and, you know, bringing up Social Security, you kind of like, you must know what's, you know, we're talking about.
Looking at our sheet, right?
Right. And, you know, but again, going from like, you know, DOGE, you might be seeing some short-term pain there for maybe the long-term viability. At least that's the outlook of what the current administration is looking at, right? And so.
There's an issue there. I mean.
Yeah, right? There certainly is on both sides. And again, we're not making political statements here. It just, you know. It is what it is. So, but as far as like Social Security goes, right, the viability of Social Security, yeah, I mean, they're talking about maybe some waste, fraud, and abuse there too, and if they're cutting that. But you know, a lot of the phone calls that we kind of is are they looking at taking Social Security away from us?
Yeah.
What's the long-term viability of Social Security? I mean, that's going to matter significantly for our clients and seniors.
Well, and that's
those that are looking at from a financial planning perspective, being a part of their income stream.
And that's why we wanted to tease this out and actually touch on the Social Security aspect, because you're seeing it float around in headlines, but often it's just in a headline and it's not really described what they're looking to do with Social Security. Okay, so what I've gathered with an immense amount of reading and looking into different policy projections and things is to try to figure out if there's waste, fraud, and abuse in Social Security system. So, you know, you give the example of the one person who's receiving Social Security benefits above the age of 300. I mean, before the U.S. even existed. I mean, okay, fine. That's fine. If you want to go and sniff out some of that those problems, I think that should make sense to everyone. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to cutting benefits, no. There's been no talk of that. Now, if that person who is 300 years old, if there's a bank account attached to that and somebody is receiving that benefit and receiving control, yeah, that person, I guess, would be having their benefit cut.
Yeah.
But on balance, those who have legitimately paid into the system and who are getting a legitimate benefit, they're not talking about taking that away. In fact, if you look, there's actually a House budget proposal out there right now that talks about eliminating taxes on Social Security.
Right.
So just be careful about what that headline drives you to from a conclusion standpoint.
And decisions, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, you know, not necessarily sitting at this table, but we got a 20-something down the hallway here in an office. If we don't make some changes here, he's going to have no Social Security.
Right.
So it's okay to go through and do this, but just don't let a headline lead you down the wrong direction, because there's been no talk about cutting benefits. In fact, how about cutting taxes on those benefits? Mm-hmm. That's to date. So, yep.
And we'll find out more when we look ahead, not just March, but as we kind of go through the process, as they evaluate, as they research and everything that kind of goes along with it. But if we do look ahead, maybe just to March, right? We're already a couple of days into March. It's been a little up and down. We'll take you through that at the next pod. But, you know, what are we looking at in March?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's about as clear as mud, but right. But hey, it's all right. So the bottom line is what you're looking for is the leaders out there that actually are, you know, making moves that will impact the capital markets. So probably our best guide through this is going to be Scott Bessent, our Treasury Secretary, very level-headed individual from my perspective. And so what he's talking about right now is there's more focus on actually interest rates than the stock market. The issue that you come to with that is rates have been coming down due to economic uncertainty. You know, tariffs create economic uncertainty. And in that environment, you're finding that bonds are actually firming up, and that means that rates are coming down. So I think that the goal is to get the 10-year Treasury yield. I'm thinking they want it below 4. It's flirting with, you know, 4. It's not there yet. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're going to work hard to get those interest rates down. And I think they're going to use the cover of they inherited this economy from a different administration. And if you listen to what they're talking about, they're saying that it's not going to be the Trump economy until, you know, mid-year or something like that. So what does that sound like to me? It sounds like the ability to kind of let the markets be volatile, try and get those interest rates down. So we need to understand that, be prepared. You know, nobody's got a crystal ball, but I think that's the best bet.
And we'll keep working it, right?
You bet.
All right. Well, till next month.
Yeah.
We'll see everybody back. And as always,
it's an honor.
See you guys this morning. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Advanced Capital Management Incorporated is a registered investment advisor. Information presented on this program is believed to be factual and up to date, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, and it should not be regarded as complete analysis of the subjects discussed. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk, and unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Tax and estate planning information should not be construed as formal legal or tax advice. Always consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific legal or tax situation. Thank you, and we look forward to seeing you next month.